Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh-Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down
at the Roundtable. Thanks for joining us as we continue our discussion on structure in Little Women.
All these experiences and the morals that go with them, it is a coming of age story, yeah. Or more specifically, it's five coming of age stories, because we have March sisters, mm-hmm. and we have Lori, and there's a lot of growing up Lori does. And I mean, even Beth, who it's referred to that she always remains childlike, but we still see her grow with her, ability to, she's so shy, but she goes over when she has the slippers to give to Mr. Lawrence. And I mean, even that right there is growth as part of the coming of age for her.
That's a great chapter all on its own. I would probably choose different words to describe Beth's growth. I wouldn't say she stays childlike. I think of all the characters, I think she grows the most. I think she becomes the most adult. The passage we picked for, you know, when we pick our standalone passages, which we haven't really read those out to anybody, they're on the website, you can find them. The passage we picked is when she's telling Joe she's all right, she knows she's going to die, and she's made her peace with that. And none of the other characters reach that level of maturity, I don't think. I think of all the March sisters, she dies the most mature of all of them. Now, innocence is never lost. Beth retains her innocence because she doesn't get to grow up and be a wife and a mother or anything else. She is, because of her health, relegated to the back seat of life, if you will, and she watches her sisters go out in the world and achieve and accomplish and, you know, marry and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Although she dies before she knows Amy's married or anything, but she's seen she knows that they're gonna live those lives, I guess is the way I should say it. Mm-hmm. She knows she's not gonna live that life. So she retains the innocence of the small world that she inhabits. But I think emotionally and psychologically, she grows up she's more mature than all of them. At least at the time of her death. I think, you know, if you want to say that they all grow up more after she's gone and everything, I think that's true too. But she's so young, and yet she certainly achieves a level of maturity and perspective.
I think that's an interesting way of looking at it. I'm sorry, I interrupted.
No, I'm kind of repeating myself, but I feel like that level of maturity and that point of view that she has tells us that she is much more mature and I would say innocent but not childlike. I'm not sure what words would be best describe her, but I always felt like she was wiser than her years when she died, I guess is one of the kind of phrases you might find in a book like Little Women, you know, kind of archaic phrase, but she's wiser than her years. But.
Yeah, that's an interesting take that I had not considered, and I think it's a very good argument that she has, because she has had to deal with her own mortality in a way that other ones have not. I think that you are right in that respect. I do know, though, that there are some scenes, and I'll have to dig up quotes for later, but where Joe is reflecting on, Beth still has her kittens, she still has her dolls.
Oh, yeah, oh, definitely, yeah. Her life is definitely... Like I said, it's small. It is a child's life in a way, and I feel like her whole family works to preserve that for her, and she knowingly and with full awareness also does that. I feel like the difference is that the family wants to keep her safe and a child and protected and freeze time, whereas she is more like accepting that is as far as she's ever going to get in the world. And her her brain and her intellect and her wisdom don't stop growing and evolving. I don't know. I feel like, you know, Beth dies, Melanie and Gone with the Wind dies, both of them die in full acceptance. That is their fate, and it's happening, and their concern is for their loved ones. You know, and when I was a kid, those two characters, the way they dealt with illness that led to death and stuff like that, really impacted me. And I mean, I spent a lot of time thinking, I'll be like Beth, I'll be like Melanie. And I was like, I don't think I can be like that because I'm too scared, you know? I mean, they were brave, noble, dying people. And I did not feel like I was brave, noble, and I didn't want to die. So, you know, I looked up at these characters. They were the pedestal, you know, if you will. They were what I would wanted to aspire to. I remember very clearly the day that the first doctor who ever diagnosed my actual lung disease diagnosed me. My mom and I had gone to the doctor, and we got this doctor who'd seen this disease in third world countries. He was a former army doctor, and recognized it immediately. And I had been going to doctors for years. I had been tested at the CDC in Atlanta for everything that could possibly be related to lungs, you know, from tuberculosis to cystic fibrosis to everything, multiple times. Nobody knew why I was getting pneumonia over and over and over and over. And I wasn't growing, and I was just withering away into nothing. And this doctor knew right away. He knew the name of the disease. He knew there was nothing really to do about it except keep pumping me full of antibiotics and tip me upside down and pound on my back and make me cough stuff out of my lungs. I mean, he saved my life, you know. And we came home. I was in the room. I was in the doctor's room when he told my mom I had 3 to 5 years to live, and there was nothing we could do. But this was what we were going to do, and you know, hope for the best. You know, and drive home in absolute silence. You know, I'm like 7 or 8 years old, and all I could think about was my dad was going to be home from work at 5 o'clock, and my mom was going to have to tell him what the doctor said, and I was just terrified because, you know, I knew my dad, even at that age, I knew my dad was not going to be able to handle this. You know, the reaction was going to look and sound like anger. Because when my dad was scared or hurt or anything, it came out, you know, loud and angry. And I'm the same way, too. When I sound angry, chances are my feelings are hurt or I'm really scared about something. I mean, I'm so much like my dad on that. And so I was down in my room, you know, waiting to hear him, you know, come through the door of the kitchen. And when my mom was down cooking dinner and trying, you know, to not show my brothers that, you know, she was crying and all this stuff. And I was just like, just petrified little person thinking, oh my, and all I could think was, I'll be like Beth. I'll be like Beth. I'll be like Beth. And to me, that meant putting on a brave face and smiling and, you know, trying to act like everything was going to be okay. Man, did that backfire, because my mom told my dad. My dad came down to my room, and I turned to the doorway when he came in. He just was white as a sheet and looked like, you know, he'd seen a ghost. And I had this big smile on my face, and he was so mad at me because he thought I was, you know, being, you know, I don't even know how to express
flippant.
Like, I don't even know, you know. I just knew I knew in the second it was the wrong thing to do. But at 7, 8 years old, what do you don't know how to fix it, right? You know, he thought I was, you know, just making a joke out of it, or I was, I don't even know what he thought. I just could tell by his face that I had not, that was not the right thing to do. And he was so mad at me. And that made it hard for a while, because my dad did not get over anger quickly. And, you know, that was the first, last, and only time that my lung disease was discussed at home that day. The rest of my life, it wasn't, other than to be told what I couldn't do, or could or couldn't do, like, don't get cold, don't get chilled, don't overdo, don't, no, you can't have friends, you can't go to friends' houses, you can't do stuff after school, you have to come home. You know, they were trying to protect me, they were trying to keep my environment small. And so that I wouldn't, because, you know, if I'd gotten somebody's germs, a flu, a virus, whatever, that could have killed me. You know, that's how weak I was at that point. I was just so, you know, there's just, my immune system was shot. And so it was like this whole thing was this silence. You know, there was no conversation about you know, my health. So I learned very early on not to express anything about it, but I remember so clearly thinking, I'll be like Beth, that's the thing, that's the way to be, my family will appreciate that. Man, was that a mistake, you know? Yeah. It just backfired.
This has been At the Round Table with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org. We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Round Table.